solving systems of simultaneous equations. And that's actually what we were just doing here on this slide 127, finding the values of x and y which simultaneously make p and q have the desired right-hand side values. So putting the simultaneous equations into matrix form, then it has this structure. We wish to find the column vector x such that the matrix A, pre-multiplied by it, gives us this right-hand side B. And we could solve this using the inverse matrix for A, if we had it. Pre-multiply both the left-hand side and the right-hand side by A to the minus 1. These two cancel out, giving us the identity matrix. Identity matrix multiplied by x is just x. So we have x equals a to the minus 1 b. So that looks like a nice, simple approach to find the solution to simultaneous equations. But unfortunately, finding the explicit matrix inverse is often, certainly using Cramer's rule, it's very expensive and numerically unstable. So we don't find it that way. We'll talk about ways which are tantamount to generating the inverse, and then I'll show you how we actually get the inverse from those ways. Also note that B itself might not be a column vector. We might have a whole set of B's, and it could be a multiple set of right-hand sides, in which case X will also have the same width, and we'll have a solution for each possible right-hand side. And one thing we'll need to think about is how many right-hand sides are we going to solve. If it's only one, then we might use a different approach than if we had lots of right-hand sides, in which case it will be worthwhile computing something like a to the minus 1 in order to be able to quickly apply it to multiple right-hand sides. So the method that we learn in school for doing this is basically called Gaussian elimination, and we perform Gaussian elimination to convert an arbitrary matrix A into an upper triangular form, and then we do back substitution, and that's what we have on this slide. So here's an example. We wish to find the values of x0, x1, x2, so just one set of solutions, just one right-hand side. Here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8, for some reason, is our matrix of interest. And the procedure that we do is we need to, for instance, add minus 4 times the first row to the second. So since the left-hand side is equal to the right-hand side, we can freely add a multiple of any row to any other row without upsetting any equalities in mathematical theory anyway, although we have to be aware of cancellation if we're doing it on a computer. So we'll be adding the same amount to both sides of an equation. So we add minus 4 times the first row to the second. That produces this 0 here and changes the other coefficients and the right-hand side. Then we might choose to add minus 7 times the third row, because that was a 7 there and that was a 1 there, to the third, minus 7 times the first row to the third row, sorry. That's going to produce this 0 here and change those numbers. And then finally, we'll take twice the second row from the third row. And now we have a pattern, which is that the lower entries in this resultant matrix are all 0, those beneath the leading diagonal, and the ones on the leading diagonal and above it are potentially non-zero. These are all 0 below it, so this is what we call an upper triangular matrix. And from that form, we can straight away see that x2 must be 1, because minus 1, 0 times x0 plus 0 times x1 plus minus 1 times x2 equals minus 1. And then once we have x2, we can substitute that in and we can work out the value for x1. And then when we have both of those values, we can substitute those in and get the value for x0. So this is exactly what we're taught to do at school. The complexity of this is order n cubed, because we're doing n operations, n outer loops. Each outer loop potentially has to do all of the one rows up to that point, and then each row has n entries in it, as we'll see clearly in the source code for this. So the complexity is order n cubed. But this can go wrong. What if the pivot element A00 is small or very small? If we have a systematic approach to this and we code up what we've just done, you'll see the very first step we did was we added -4 times the first row to the second. And the reason we used -4, if you work it through, is because 4 divided by 1 and with a sign changed is -4. This one we did -7 because 7 divided by 1 with a sign change is -7 and so on. Now, when we do 4 divided by 1, that's a perfectly well-behaved operation. That 1 is called the pivot, and it could be 0, in which case dividing by it is going to be highly bad. You get not a number, and the whole system will just propagate not a number values across the rest of the matrix. So what we actually need to do is be aware for selecting pivot values which are 0 and doing something else if they are. If the pivot is very small, not 0, then we can divide by it, but we're basically then going to be adding a lot of large numbers, if you work it through, to the horizontal rows. And if the small numbers are in there and they get lots of large numbers added on, what's going to happen? Remember, floating point addition involves taking the small number and shifting it right while it bumping up its exponent to be the same as that of the large number. As we do that, we can lose digits out the bottom of the small number, and in the worst case, we get complete underflow, all the significant digits shift out. So the problem of having a small pivot is almost worse than having a zero pivot, because at least with a zero pivot, things start to go wrong in a clear way, whereas underflow is quiet. But we note that we can freely interchange our rows. Doesn't matter what order we list the rows in. So it might be possible to choose the order of the rows such that there is no zero at the point where we come to choose a value as a pivot. And if we do that sort of sorting, then that's called partial row pivoting. And the code I'm about to show you implements that. It's really rather simple. We just scan along. In fact, the best thing to use is the largest number in absolute values. So naively, we would just scan through, and if there was a zero, or we won't use that, we'll use another row. But a better approach is mathematically is to choose the largest number that we find in absolute values, because then when we divide by it, we'll be having the smallest amount of multiplying going on, and hence preserving as much information as possible in the summation step. There are also a number of other techniques that we can use to optimize the situation. For instance, it might be that however much we sort the rows, we can't avoid a zero pivot or a very small pivot. So another thing we can do is, instead of permuting the rows, it's perfectly fine to permute the columns of a matrix, but when we permute the columns, we have to keep track of our permutation, because the variables in the vertical column X will be permuted as well. So our answers will come out in the wrong order. But if we remembered the permutation we chose, we can just permute the answers back at the end. And another thing we can do is permute both rows and columns and do complete pivoting. But how many permutations are there of a given number? Well, if there's n rows, and we're talking about very large matrices here where this is commonly used, n might be 1,000 or so, then there's 1,000 factorial permutations of the rows, so there's a lot to choose from potentially. There's 1,000 columns, so 1,000 factorial of those, and we've got to choose 1,000 factorial 1 from 1,000 factorial squared, potentially, row and column combined permutations. And even the selection isn't easy, because as we change the rows around, then the nature of the columns looks a bit different and might interact and so on. So all in all, doing both row and column permutation is avoided. We only start doing a search if things get really tricky. So I'll show you the code for this. It's in the demos folder, and have a look at the code, and we'll go into the code in the next lecture. But this is in the Java file. This is the Gaussian elimination step at the bottom. Well, the whole thing is three nested for loops, one there, one here, and then one inside it. And with the three nested for loops, that gives us the cubic cost. This upper section of code here is optional. If we have pivot enable, which is a Boolean false, we skip that, but then we might be likely to divide by zero. So what this does is it searches through the available pivots and finds the one that has the largest in absolute math.abs terms and chooses that as the pivot.